Blog Talk Radio.
In company with poetry. Happy Friday. I hope you all had a great week. And as always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. We had a great board tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's poetry. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. What's cooking?
Oh, not much. I cooked earlier. I'm not cooking anything right now. I did make macaroni and cheese, though. Homemade. Yep. That was my big problem. Oh, you didn't mean Laurent. That must be Laurent. It sounds just like him. Hey, Laurent.
And you got to mute me and then unmute me so I know that things were safe.
Oh, I don't know what it said unmuted. I thought maybe that was a clue. I don't know. I could be wrong. Sometimes it only beeps. It changes his
Good
mind.
Good evening, Rex. Good evening, Jean.
What's doing?
What's doing?
Not a whole lot.
Oh, there you go.
Not a whole lot. Just here. I'm just here. That's a triumph in and of itself.
There you go. Sometimes that's all I can account for, too. Oh, my God. I don't know. It's one of them days, I guess. You know. But we do have a nice looking board. I think we have like 6 carryovers from last week, and we got a lot of good poetry on top of that. So I can't wait to go through. We only have a couple of audios, though. I was surprised. Some nights we're inundated. Other nights we have just enough. So, yeah. So, anyhow, what's new with you, Rex? What was your weather today?
95.
95?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Hell, it's still 84 right now.
Wow. Humid?
Yeah, it's had damp.
Yeah. It was pretty warm and sticky here. It was up to 85 today. And it was just all kinds of humid out there. Like, yuck. And we have rain. This didn't help. It didn't take any of it away, that's for sure. And, Laurent, what was your weather today? We'll go up and down the East Coast. It's all cool.
It was a solid gray day, misty and drizzling all day long until about 5 o'clock when it finally cleared up.
Wow.
About 70 degrees.
Oh, 70 I could do. When it's hot and humid, it's horrible around here. It's like I went outside and I said, yeah, I don't think so today. You know, had to go out in the rain and water my plants. You know. Mother Nature tries really hard to water them, but she doesn't do a great job. Sorry.
As long as your dog doesn't water them, you know?
What's that?
As long as your dog doesn't water them.
Yes. Nobody can water them but me. That's the rule. Silly. Silly stuff. So, yeah. Let me see now. I don't know. We have, I don't know what that was. Finding little messages going. What is that? Oh, hello, Dark and Norris. Welcome to the party. And hello, James Hatfield. Oh, Lauren, you made somebody king? I did not know.
Well, that was in reference to running James and then Rex. James, king.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh, my God, I'm so confused. Okay. See, king of. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes. It's nice to see James and Dark and Auras on the board. And I don't know. It should be. Oh, and Naomi and Pam were here. I don't know where they're at now, but they're somewhere. Probably napping. That's what they were promoting earlier. Anyway.
They're beating feet to chocolate and chocolate, strawberries, and beer.
Chocolate, strawberries, and beer? I'll do the chocolate and strawberries, or I'll do the beer. I don't really care for beer, but I don't know about combined. I don't think I could do that at all.
The beer is a chaser.
Yep.
Ooh.
You got to add a little bit of tart to go with the sweet.
No.
That's right.
No. I don't think that sounds...
What, are you going to be all bitter there? All hoppy and bitter? Is that it?
No, I would rather be all sweet. You guys can drink the beer. I'll eat the strawberries and chocolate. It's all good.
Well, in that case, you can chase the strawberries and chocolate with some good cognac.
Oh, maybe.
Hey, Rex, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Somebody gave me a bottle of Don Q rum that has got to be on the order of, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years old. Came out of an old basement. It's intact. It's completely sealed. That's still good?
Yes. I'd enjoy it.
Did age make rum better?
My thought is because it's that old, has it got a cork? Or is it?
I don't know. I just know that it's still completely sealed with a seal across the top.
Oh, my guess is, it's aged itself into a nice, flavorful bounty. Ooh.
Okay. I had a box with about 10 bottles, quart bottles, all kinds of stuff, all old, ancient whiskeys, etc. Too bad I'm not a drinker.
Ooh. There you go. I have a bottle in my closet that is a bottle of Crown Royal, which was sealed somewhere right around the year I was born. And it's still sealed. And I keep looking at it. I keep saying, for a special occasion, I guess I'll have it the night before I die, or they'll drink it after I go, because, you know, how do you know when to open
Crown Royal's good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's what they say. You know, I've had a few Crown Royals in my day. But, yeah. So, see, I know that same story. These darn things all sealed up and looking pretty. But my understanding though is
nice, James. I like that little note there.
Ask any virgin, all sealed up and looking great.
And that definitely was cork. Cork, I'd say. It's all cork.
Wow. But no, my understanding about the Crown Royal though is that once it's bottled,
yeah,
it doesn't age anymore. That's what was explained to me. Because when it ages, it's in a different kind of, I don't know, whatever. I'm not well versed on that process.
Well, my thought with the rum is, even though it's in the bottle,
mm-hmm,
the flavors ought to be able to get a little bit more intense. You get a little bit more of that vanilla, a little bit more of the sugar out of the plus. If it's aged in oak barrels, that flavor,
mm-hmm,
gets to immerse yourself a bit more as well.
Is John Q a good brand?
From back then, I don't think it's been sold lately, or unless they got sold off into something else. But
it's listed as the biggest seller wherever it's made.
Well.
Thank you.
Something that they saved it for a reason, so there's something special about it.
I did a little bit of research on the web, and Don Q makes one that sells for $83 a bottle.
Oh, okay.
It is supposed to be Puerto Rico's best known rum. Top selling rum in Puerto Rico. Yeah. And it says something said on 150 years. What's the proof on it, Laurent? Maybe I'll come up with
80.
80.
Proof.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not real familiar with rum. I like spiced rum.
All right. Are we here for poetry or whiskey?
There are some really good rums out there to play with.
Yeah.
Those would be good, Laurent. Those would be good.
Too bad I don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
But Puss's Black Seal rum is good. As is I forgot what the rum's thinking of. Damn.
It'll come to you. It'll come to you.
Yeah, probably. Later on.
About 3 a.m. It's usually about the time all my unsolved mysteries come about.
Hang in there, Gene.
Let me see. I guess we'll start here. And I think, Rex, I'm going to have you start us off with this one. This
all
is
right,
by SSM. It's called I Wait. Now, we read this the Friday we had the dilemma, and nothing got recorded. So that's why it's going to sound familiar. Whenever you're ready.
All right. I Wait by SSM. I am hearing so much these days that empower the girl child is the new craze. We are changing by leaps and downs. Women will now see better days. And I wonder, really? Because though I see some economic advancement, the social psyche remains the same. A working woman in-law's house still dons purdah for tradition's sake. And no matter how much they try to square their shoulders and stand straight, they keep slouching under this burden of unappreciative, lascivious stares. How bit by bit, step by step, the feeling of not being enough is made to deep set in their bones. How they are repeatedly made to feel like being a crow amongst peacocks. How like a blooming sunflower they keep waiting for the sun to shine upon them, keep waiting for that pat on the back, that adoring smile that never comes. And yet, you want me to believe what you say? Oh, I will for sure. The day when they will be allowed to own their voice and not forced to fit in. The day when they will not be made to feel like an imposter in their own skin. Until then, I wait. End poem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Narok, we're going to kick it off with you.
Yeah, I remember this from last week, and I detected a real note of bitterness in it. And, you know, not for no reason either. It's always tempting as a male who doesn't have to go through a lot of the things that women do that are expressed in this poem so beautifully, so passionately. It's very easy for us to say, oh, well, things have gotten better. But you know what? We don't walk in their shoes. And for every woman where things have gotten better, there's probably five women things have gotten worse in one way or another, that we have such a long way to go. And as she says, until then, I wait. Very powerful piece.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jane, we're coming to you.
This is what I wrote last week, or 2 weeks ago. I thought it was a great piece. Change is always slow. You know, for women to step to the forefront is slower, especially in other countries. I congratulate her on her front page pick, and I thought her points were well made throughout, you know, and yeah, there is some bitterness in it, Laurent, I believe, but you know, it just makes you mad, you know, especially when you're in that position. So I can't imagine, but it was well done. So thank you, SSM.
Absolutely. Hey, change is slow, and well, I won't argue with traditions, and sometimes when the young progress in life, generation after generation, you might lose a little touch of that norm to have traditions role. Yet, they've served that society for quite a while. Sometimes, like Gene says, it takes a long time for the generalization or the moving up of out of strict guidelines to tradition that kind of bury the idea of who and what you want to be, how to express yourself. And yes, it is bitter, that note to and until then I wait is that note of yeah, we might have gotten some things, but some things still lag. So thank you, SSM.
Absolutely. Okay, well, on that note, I'll check the board. Nope. And I'm going to put up a poem. And I'm going to read this one. It's called A Heart Symphony by Stitch of Silence. 4 lines. Only kidding. Haha, made you look. A Heart Symphony by Stitch of Silence. In a world of wonder where love does reside, I close my eyes and let my heart confide. With a gentle touch on a tree so grand, I feel the magic of nature's loving hand. The whispers of leaves as they dance in the breeze carry a symphony of awe like honeybees. Nature's beauty surrounds me, a sight to behold, as love's emotion within me unfolds. With eyes shut tight, I let my heart soar, immersed in awe, forever wanting more. The tree whispers secrets, ancient and wise, guiding me towards love as time flies. Time on the trunk, I feel its heartbeat strong, a connection formed where I truly belong. Love wraps me in its warm, tender embrace as the tree's love echoes, leaving no trace. So let us close our eyes and feel with our hearts, allowing awe to weave its enchanting arts. For in nature's embrace, love is ever near, a precious gift worthy of gentle care. And poem. Yes. Great
read, Gene.
Yeah,
you. Actually, just walk that kind of note of somebody who's actually takes time to sniff and smell the roses, so to speak, as well as enjoy the notes of, and harmonies that are wrought within nature, because they leave an imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And as she says, opening one's heart and mind in those moments and elevate one to a position where they're more in tune with not just themselves but all other things. And in that, yeah, love can grow easily. So nicely done, Stitcher. Thank you. All right, Laurent, how about you?
I'm really touched by this because it seems to carry a message that even if something that you're faced with is a non-sentient being, like a tree, it's still living. And as long as it's living, it has a connection to anything else that's living. And when he says, with eyes tight, I let my heart soar, immersed in awe, forever wanting more, the tree whispers secrets ancient and wise, guiding me towards love as time flies. That connection that you've established with your hand on the trunk, I don't really think it's imaginary. I really believe that there is a connection between living beings, non-sentient or otherwise, that can be formed. Minds are very strange things filled with untapped powers, and trees are an ancient race. I have to believe there's something there. So I think the poem is a standout because of the emotion that it creates and the message that it communicates. Well done.
Nice, Laurent. Thank you. We hit on that this morning with sounds, the idea of how each living thing, including the earth itself, holds its own resonance, that which keeps it attuned with itself. And
yeah,
the idea of Tesla came across this about 100 years ago now, the fact that everything walks within the same thing, even the human bodies hold their own resonant tune. So, nicely said. Gene, how about you? You got to
read. I really like this piece a lot. I loved each one of the stanzas, but I'm going to go right to the beginning because, you know, I think that she definitely hits on that image right from the beginning. In a world of wonder where love does reside, I close my eyes and let my heart confide. With a gentle touch on a tree so grand, I feel the magic of nature's loving hand. The whispers of leaves as they dance in the breeze carry a symphony of awe like honey to bees. Nature's beauty surrounds me, a sight to behold, as love's emotion within me unfolds. You know, and it just builds from there, and I think she really did a great job capturing kind of what I felt from the image itself, because that image, I absolutely adore that image. I thought it was just really a nice, thoughtful piece. So, yes, great job, and thank you so much, Stitch of Silence. Great, great job. Loved it.
Good evening, Daniel.
We got Daniel. Ooh.
Yes, he's on the board.
Hello, Daniel. Somebody going to sing Daniel, my brother? Come on. You can do it.
Or, oh, Danny boy.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, my God. Okay. Let me see now. I have to grab up the next piece for Monsieur Laurent and see what I have. Okay. Well, I think I'm going to go here. No, I don't want to go there yet. I'm going to go here. I have to give him the 5,000-word poem so I can do that six-pointer. Okay, Laurent, whenever you're ready. It's called Thread Through the Needle by Jack Tom Gawick.
Thread through the needle. Your love moves through me. Thread through a needle as we have stitched up a lifetime together. Your love throws through me water in the river channel, wearing nightgowns made of flannel. Endless rips and cuts we have mended, a beautiful daughter we have tended. And when at last this life has ended, you will ascend with me right behind you, together to the end. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. You got the first look.
You know, I like this piece a lot. It, you know, it shows that unity because, you know, Jack will always tell you, you know, it's my anniversary or whatever. He's always very loving towards his wife. And this poem is no exception to that. You know, your love moves through me, thread through a needle as we've stitched up a lifetime together. And, you know, he speaks like that often, and I think it's really sweet that he is like that. You know, they're the things that you do, you weave together throughout time. And, yep. So it's a great job. And Jack, thanks for sharing this one. I really like this very much. Yeah, great stuff.
All right. Jack hits on that notion of love and connectivity through a lifetime of ups and downs and the challenges that come and meeting them head on. But he also hits on the back end of that note, why after so many years together, when when one passes, usually the other passes not too long behind. It's that note to still connectivity, that the better half of them is gone, so they wish to rejoin them on the other side, so to speak. So, like you touched upon, Jack, thank you very much. And, Ross, you got to read it?
Jack writes a moving piece. I have no difficulty at all seeing days as stitches in a vast tapestry that takes a lifetime to create, and that tapestry suffers its rips and cuts, but they are carefully mended. It's intact until the very end, when there is almost a voluntary ascension behind an involuntary ascension, as you mentioned, Rex. When one goes, the other has a tendency to go, and it's quite moving, I think.
Thank you very much, Laurent. And back to you, Gene.
I keep telling you, he's never around when you need him, Rex. You should just give it up.
Eugene is actually a woman, you know. It isn't E-U-G-N-E. It's
E-U-G-E-N-E is the male spelling of Gene.
Eugenia.
Right. But it's spelled Y-O-U space J-E-A-N. I'm just being ornery.
I'll tell you what, you take that up with Poeta. Right, Rex? We didn't start this fire.
You want me to fuel the camera?
I lit the fire and Poeta fanned the flame, so it's been used ever since.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Gotta call the fire department.
Fanning the flame. Oh, God. Okay, Rex, I'm going to put this next one up for you. This is called Dreamer's Cry for Love by Nuno Cardoso.
Dreamer's Cry for Love by Nuno Cardoso. As you weep, plastic daisies bloom in between my chest. There I see that dreams don't sleep. Jameson green tea still breathes inside bars. Moonshine glasses toast in the name of our return. And pepper flakes grin wide at us and the boys. I weep as well. And poem. All right, Laurent, what do you think?
Well, that might take a moment.
Me too.
Moonshine glasses toast in the name of our return, and pepper flakes grin wide at us and the boys. I weep as well. So, the weeping occurs at the beginning and at the end. And plastic daisies blooming in my chest are an odd image, not terribly odd. And the observation is made that dreams don't sleep. It gives the idea that regardless of life, and I can't help but read the AM, which says crying isn't all the bad things. I'm trying to tie the weeping to what I see between the lines. And I'm basically saying that we're crying over dreams that don't come to fruition. I don't know. I honestly am just a little confused by this, I hate to say.
Thank you, Laurent. Gene, you want to give it a ring?
Well, it says love, relationship, and metaphors. I was lost with the plastic daisies right at the beginning and in between my chest. There I see the dreams don't sleep. Okay. I am lost. I really am. Because I'm looking at them going, okay, Jameson green tea still breathes inside bars. Yeah. In the name of our return. You know, so, you know, I'm sure that it's, you know, sadness of being apart is what I would gather from it. No matter how much you drink, you can't make it go away. I don't know for sure. I just find it to be, yes, a little obscure for me. Because, you know, it takes me a while. But, you know, thanks for sharing it. You know, I mean, I'm sure that it's, I'm sure it's as simple as a plain as a nose on my face, but I have no idea where to even begin. Come on, Rex, give us what you got.
Actually, I'm probably wrong, but I see a wake, an Irish wake, a proper Irish wake. As you weep, plastic daisies bloom in between my chest. The thought of propping the coffin up with the body displayed and the plastic lilies in the hands up against the chest. And the thought with that dreams don't sleep. Jameson green tea still breathes the sidebars. Moonshine glasses toast in the name of our return. That idea of the last toast to in remembrance to those who have passed. And the thought with the pepper flakes grin wide at us and the boys. The idea of more youthful days when we toasted ourselves, so to speak. And the thought of my weep as well to finish kind of hits on that note. Yes, I don't get to see the rest of you enjoying yourselves as a note either. So, like I said, I'm probably wrong, but I see it as a wake, and wakes are always cheerful. Tell the story.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're probably on the money. I just don't have – I wasn't putting one and one together and getting two, that's for sure.
Yeah, I got to iron up a 4.5. That doesn't work.
I know. Math, it's overrated.
Well, okay. Hey, I did say I was probably wrong, so yeah, that probably was overrated.
No, I said math is overrated. I said, you know, one and one. Ron's doing four. I don't know. Hey, Naomi. How are you tonight? Woo-hoo. Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Insomnia Gambles by Hoax Hope. And I'm going to give this one a read. And that. Okay. Here we go. Make this a little bit bigger. Insomnia Gambles by Hope Soul. What am I other than waiting for a song to start, the note to drop, building up for the big release, in limbo, waiting. Green light, 45 minutes ago, turns to 13 hours. Checkmate, time plays for all the silence. Pushing away is best friends with running. It's 4:41 a.m. and I wonder why. But I don't want to dig too deep. Too afraid I'll strike oil. That's priceless truth that's scarier than being alone. Forklift horns, beep, banging metal, fills the space where seconds die as I lie with racing thoughts, playing connected dots, slamming pieces together that just won't fit. Rain sounds quietly. Tap my pillow. Stomach turns as air reaches the limit. I told her I would learn to let things go, but then what would I write? What would I write about? Sorry. Poems can't pen themselves, no matter what brilliance says. I'm sure there are pages left unsaid, kept in a vault behind Plan B, two forms of identity. what they see and what you give to me. I contemplate happiness, sorrow, old tears and neglect. All of it fills the seat as I continue to wait here, left on red. Okay, end of poem.
Great read, Dean. Thank you very much. I like the shape in this. Laurent, what do you think?
Forklift horns beep, banging metal fills the space where seconds die. Their lie with racing thoughts, playing connect the dots, slamming pieces together that just don't fit. In the world of insomnia, that's a beautiful way of describing what goes on in the mind. You hear the extraneous sounds, you count the seconds as you lie with a mind that won't shut off. And no matter what you do, you can't resolve everything mentally. You'll find that kind of quiet peace that you're looking for, especially at 4:41 a.m., and that can be torture. And yeah, that leads you to contemplating things like happiness, sorrow, old tears, and neglect. And it just leaves you waiting and waiting, left on read. It's a very beautifully done piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, James, you got to read it. What about you?
You know, it's insomnia. You know, I can say thank gosh that I don't have that problem. But on those nights when occasionally I can't sleep, I know my mind just races. And I hear this and I hear that, and I'm thinking about everything and nothing all at the same time. So I have to associate that to be the long-term kind of description as well. But wonderful, wonderful bits and pieces here. You know, the one that Laurent read was a good one. Rain sounds quietly tap my stomach, turns as air reaches a limit. I told her I would learn to let things go, but then what would I write about? Poems can't pen themselves, no matter what brilliance says. I'm sure there's pages left unsaid, kept in a vault behind Plan B, two forms of identity, what they see and what you give to me. Lots of things. I think that what I'm getting from it is just all these random kind of things that are just run through your mind when you can't sleep. And I think it was just well penned. And I like the way she laid it out on the page. It's intriguing. You know, it kind of keeps your mind like bouncing all over the place. Kind of like my mind would be if I couldn't sleep. See, that's the way I see it. Clever piece, Hope. Nice job.
It is. It digs into it in that second, third, and fourth stanza. See, 45 minutes ago turns 13 hours. Checkmate. Time plays for all the silence. And then pushing away his best friends with running. It's 4:41 a.m., and I wonder why. But I don't want to dig too deep. Too afraid I'll strike oil. That priceless truth that's scarier than being alone. And then that where seconds die as I lie with racing thoughts playing connected dots, slamming pieces together that just won't fit. Yes, the overactive mind going at a hell out pace, and it doesn't stop until you finally wear yourself out to the point where before you know it, you're busy running amok, and all of a sudden it's the next morning, and damn, what the hell did I do last night? I don't like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, it's back to you.
Okie doke. Let me see now. That brings me to Laurent. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to give you this piece by Luke J.R., called Sunken Sanctum. So get your S's together whenever you're ready.
Okay. You gave me a long one. Thank you. My voice needed a little exercise.
Absolutely.
Sunken Sanctum. Diverse divers, drifting doves, sunken drivers, sunken ships, silent echoes, skeleton, hollow eclipse, lady flows within ocean, promotion following fishes filtered twice. Angler fish, sunken light. Angel fish, sunken sight. There you go.
Nice
great
job.
Read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, you got first whips. What you think?
First off, say hello to Naomi. She's joining us. Hello, Naomi.
Hello. How are you guys?
Almost.
Bonsoir.
I think this piece by Luke J.R. is it's pretty cool. I mean, he has a lot of his rights where he takes words and he does a lot of alliteration and comes up with different ways of, I don't know, his work always kind of makes me, I don't want to use the word intriguing again, but it does catch my attention because of the way he writes. And I thought this was clever, Sunken Sanctum. So I imagine, the ship sunk in the ocean, and diverse divers drifting doves, sunken drivers, sunken ships, and all these images. He just feeds you images, one and then another and then another. So he kind of walks you through an image, a picture in your mind with his words. It's not like he doesn't get into sentences and all that. He kind of lets your mind pull it all together, which is clever, So nice job, Luke, and thanks for sharing. Great little brevity.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And Naomi, what about you?
Well, I find that his words really capture the mysterious depth of the ocean and everything that could be there. That's one of the places on Earth that are still to be discovered is the depths of the ocean. He really, really captures it here, diverse divers, drifting doves, his mixture of words to describe divers as drifting doves, that's awesome. And, all the things you're just placed in front of, the whole, the immensity of the ocean and all that it englobes. So very well done indeed, Luke J.R. Beautiful brevity.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, you got to read it.
Well, he is highly specific with his words and his brevity. I mean, it's only 30 words, yet he says an enormous amount about the ocean, about people, divers, drifting doves. If you've ever been diving, if you're, let's say you're 30 or 40 feet down, maybe 50, and you look up at other divers above you, their motions as they swim through the water slowly can almost be like birds swimming in air. So I see the drifting doves in that. The sunken drivers, sunken ships. When you have a sunken ship, it is a silent, echoed skeleton. And in other words, hollow eclipse refers to the fact that it's completely hollow, and it can block out the sun if you get on the wrong side of it. Lady flows within ocean motion. Well, that's easy enough. A female diver can be a very beautiful thing to see, and a very attractive motion as you follow the fishes, filtered flight, angler fish, sunken light. The light filters down through the water in beams that you can see. And as you get deeper, of course, that light changes a little bit darker, begins to get filtered by the depths. And then you begin to see the fish, the angler fish, the angel fish. And it is indeed a sunken sanctum. It, as Naomi said, it's a very beautiful description of what happens when you dive in the water.
Nice. You've opened that up quite well. Thank you very much, Laurent. The lady flows with an ocean motion. A great thought with the woman. But that also could be applied to a ship, because they're always female. The following fishes hits me with that note to all mariners, fair weather and following sea. And the sunken light runs up that notion of just getting into that that paradoxical nature where you hit the twilight zone, where evidence there's that demarcation within the water where light goes no further. And as you hit the sunken sanctum, is that place of reverence. It's always it's kept by those who inhabit its depths. So, well done, J.R. Luke. Thank you very much.
Yes. Nice. Hey, guys. Naomi, I have one for you. You made it just in the nick of time. So, here we go. This one is called Autumn's Arrival by Sapphire Rose.
Autumn's Arrival. A gentle breeze dances through the trees. I know autumn is close at hand. I stand and give an audience to a sparrow's sweet song. Long forgotten sun-filled days with its warm shimmering rays. Leaves unfold earth's sapphires. Whisper of nippy days ahead, far around the corner. Winter's blistering winds blow. Tall trees peer wet to the changing season. Brisk autumn months have finally found their place. Kaleidoscopic leaves with radiant hues of amber, gold, and bronze, painting a picture of autumn's arrival. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
I've always been pleased by the fact that nature gave autumn such beautiful clothes. And the dying of the leaves, they show their beauty, their real beauty. I'm especially moved by tall trees pirouetting the changing season. Brisk autumn months have finally found their place. Almost as if they're out of sorts. The months hang in abeyance. And they're finally at the same time and they step forward and they paint the landscape. I also like that stand and give an audience to a sparrow's sweet song. That's very nice. Who among us has not stopped to listen to beautiful bird song when one of those little feathered friends gives full voice to his song? Nicely done.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
I love this piece. I love autumn. I think autumn is the most beautiful season. And I think that Sapphire Rose captured it well here. You know, and I like every bit of it. And I was going to say, leaves enfold earth's zephyrs whisper of nippy days ahead. For around the corner, winter's blistering winds blow. But there's not a whole lot of imagery in that. The one that Laurent had read and the very last lines, I really did enjoy. I thought that they were just loaded with imagery in my mind. You know, tall trees peer wet onto the changing season. Crisp autumn leaves have finally found their place. Kaleidoscope leaves with radiant hues of amber, gold, and bronze, painting a picture of autumn's arrival. It was just lovely. I really liked the way that it was put together, and I think Sapphire Rose did an excellent job. So thank you, Sapphire. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jean. And Naomi, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, what a beautiful write by Sapphire Rose this is. You know, everything from the gentle breeze to the sparrow's sweet song to the, you know, long forgotten sun-filled days, the oncoming of the winter that she talks about, the tall trees pirouetting. And then at the end, the radiant hues, you know, of the leaves just puts us in the mood for, you know, autumn that's coming, you know, and puts us right in that place there, you know, with all the colors and just in the mood, puts us in the mood for autumn. So beautiful, beautiful write here by Sapphire Rose indeed.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Great comments, everybody. I think the picture is a wonderful piece of not just the diversity of trees themselves, but the colors they exude when autumn comes around. So Sapphire has drawn off of that picture quite well and given one a beautiful scene, even if the picture wasn't shown. But that picture does show quite what she drew from in order to pen this little bit of thought to the beauty of autumn and what a lot of people get to see when it's sparkling. So thank you very much, Sapphire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, then, well, we're back on you.
Okie dokie. That's going to bring me to this piece called Transparent Hearts by Betty Page. So let me give this one a look. Oh, shoot. Hang on, I hit something. Hit the wrong button. It's pretty normal for me. Okay, here we go. Transparent Hearts by Betty Page. I feel all your emotions, so visible, though not seen. We've transparent hearts. Within invisible realms, drifting, floating, feeling high, our hearts ache for each other. Opposite ends of the world, longing is unbearable. Translucent, pure emotions spilled across, vivid within, glistening in bright crimson, yet we're still chasing rainbows. Love we have is mutual. Our hearts pump with emotions. You can see the vibrations. Energies embracing, sweet, at times seems delusional, virtually impossible. Yet here we are, face to face. Gaze into obsidian mirrors, reflects pure silence. Jet blacks pouring out our souls. Loves who've tainted us before, till that we're lost in our feelings. Staring up at the bright sky, bright blue skies, wandering round in circles, searching for golden treasures. And so.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this is like, you know, she really captured the feelings of love and passion. You know, I think in this piece, like as if you're in a magical Walt Disney World with princesses and princes. You know, the jet black pouring out of our soul, loves has painted us before till we're lost in our feelings, staring up at bright blue skies, wandering around in circles, searching for golden treasures. But then, you know, the delusional, virtually impossible. So I don't know. I get a feeling that this can go both ways, either into the bright or into the dark, you know, as if love can be both. I get that out of the right a bit, you know. Yeah, it's like love is a fantasy that's unreachable almost. I don't know. Get the mixed feelings, and this makes me ponder. So that's a great thing about poetry, what it makes you really, when it's thought-provoking and it just gets under your skin and gets you wondering. So great, great write, Betty Page.
Hi. Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, when we read the first stanza, I feel all your emotions so visible, though not seen, transparent hearts. And then when in the third stanza, opposite ends of the world, longing is unbearable, translucent pure emotions. I sense we have two people who are separated by a distance, who do love each other, or at least the emotions are strongly felt between each. But at one point, yet we're still chasing rainbows, which to me seems to be a metaphor for an impossible task. You know, something that looks pretty, something that looks beautiful, and we chase it, but when we get there, the rainbow's gone. The love we have is mutual. Our hearts pump with emotions. You can see their vibrations. But there is the impossibility of what they face. Energies embracing sweet at times seems delusional, virtually impossible. When she says, yet here we are face to face, gaze into obsidian mirrors, reflect your silence, Are we talking about staring into a computer screen that's dark, for instance? Are we thinking about all the people who've loved before successfully or impossible, and we're lost in our feelings because of what happened in the past and can't quite bring it around to gain a new reality? So what are we left with? What do? We wander around in circles searching for golden treasures, something at the end of that rainbow that is being chased. I don't know whether that makes any sense or not, but there you have it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was an interesting piece by Betty. I thought it was a kind of a clever take on the prompt. This, again, is for the boy who has his hand on the tree, that prompt. So I'm not sure. When I looked at it, I wasn't sure if she was referring to some kind of a mystical distance or I'm not sure where she was going with the prompt. But I think the write itself was nicely pulled together and written. And I thought that it was a clever take on the prompt, and I enjoyed it. And thank you so much for sharing with me, Betty. I appreciate you writing for the contest. Great job.
Well, I'm gonna walk right in line with the rock because I think he hits each and every note on cue. The computer screens, the black, that notion on the back end of this, the jet blacks pouring out of our souls, loves who paint us before. Till we're lost in our feelings. That's hard noted emotion right there. Still, that baggage that's carried underneath the skin. And the staring up at bright blue skies, wandering around in circles, searching for golden treasure, it is still that touch of hope lingering and wanting because what's shared across time, energy, and space with this thought, the thought that we angle up to. I feel all your emotions still visible through, though not seen. We've transparent hearts. Within invisible realms, drifting, floating, feeling high, our hearts ache for each other. Yes, that note to firstness, finding something, yet trepidation still walks. And that trepidation is many miles apart. So how do they handle that first step in actually looking at each other? And it might have been, as you hit on that, it might have been screen to screen, looking at each other through the computer, through one of those apps. Don't know which one, but there's still that question that rolls. How do we make this work? So, nicely done, Betty. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, Rex, I'm going to put this next one up for you, and this is called Master and Servant by Poetic Picasso.
Master and Servant by Poetic Picasso. I see no need for any formal introductions, since we are well acquainted already. I to my indulgence and prominence, and you to your servitude and fragility. I suppose there is a benefit that is mutually shared between us, I, your benefactor, and you, my inheritor. But my benevolence is not any obligation, nor a duty that binds me to you by contract. Without me, you are like an orphan, destitute of status. I am your ego, and you are my sustainer. I know there are people that will say that I control you, but it's you that seek me willingly. Why do you seek me daily? It is because you enjoy the drug of vainglory and recognition. You know fully well that without you, you are nobody. It is a lot like life. Accept your truth and reconcile the thought that as your ego, I am the master and you the servant. And poem. Jean, we're going to kick it with you.
Thanks, Rex. I appreciate that. I don't know. This is a really different piece for Frank, in my mind. Let me see here. I know that there are people that will say I control you, but it is you that seek me willingly. Why do you seek me daily? It is because you enjoy the drug of vainglory and recognition. You know fully well that without me, you are nobody. It is a lot like life. Accept your truths and reconcile the thought that it is as your ego. I am the master and you the servant. You know, that line there, you know, has the thought that as your ego, I am the master and you the servant. So that's kind of a sorry state of affairs, isn't it? You know, when your ego is running the show, that's not always a good thing. But people tend to be that way. So I don't know, but I liked it. I thought Frank did a good job with it.
Yeah, nice. Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Laurent, how about you?
Well, the use of the metaphor master as servant can initially be taken literally because he plays a word game that avoids any identification until you get down to without me, you're like an orphan, this sort of status. I'm your ego and you're my sustainer. And even that, you could say that it is two individual people, because if you have a servant who would be nothing without the master, and let's say the master is someone well-to-do, well-known, some of the master's glory reflects onto the servant. But in this case, it's quite literally the ego. And I don't know, what is it? Is it the ego over self, the ego over id?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the ego is a controller, the ego is a master, because it is so tempting to please the ego, and you want to please the ego, and therefore it becomes the master. So very, very clever.
Excellent, thank you. And Naomi, how about you? You mutating? Naomi?
Yeah.
All right, I guess I'll go then. Master and Servant, I like the title. And although he hasn't put it in here in the poem itself, this smacks of an Oscar Wilde style type piece, the sort of how one offers up themselves, the physical language, the sort of, where was it, vain glory and recognition, that drug, that which sets you above and apart from the rest, not just the indication in clothing, which is part of the illusion that you go with, but also how you conform yourself to the actual realm in which you dip. You have to be indulged in prominence and use your servitude and fragility. It's two sides of the same mind. You have to be master of one in order to offer up yourself as you see yourself. And if you're not, then that servant takes over in the meantime, and it lets you fall, because you can't have a touch of fragility or indecision rolling in yourself as you're trying to convey that which and who you are. So I like it. But if it's got to be a bit on Oscar Wilde. So I like it on that. Thank you, Frank. And Naomi, you back?
Yep.
Okay.
I just got back. Yeah. The ego. What a powerful thing. you know, I think it's, you know, more in some more than other, like Phil has already said, but, you know, I think, you know, I take it when I was younger, my ego, I'm guilty of it. You know, I had to be the best in school. I had to be the best in what in my work. I had to be, I've sought that recognition. But, you know, as I got older, well, you know, it sort of became less important. And, you know, I just try to live a peaceful and accept myself and be calmer and, you know, live, just be myself, you know, and just people don't like me how I am. Well, that's too bad for them. But, I think it's when you're young, your ego, kind of spikes up, well, was that like that for me anyway? But what a thought, very thought-provoking piece here, and very well done by Poetic, by Frank. Amazing. Well-written piece.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. Back to you. Phil?
Me?
Sure. Yeah.
No problem. Okay. Laurent, I have the next piece up for you. It's called If I Were to Write a Book on Fatherhood by Cedar Chapman. Whenever you're ready.
If I were to write a book on fatherhood, the front cover would have a photo of a lighthouse. It'd be a giant phallic brick structure, erected to graze the sky, frozen granite with a bent-out cyclops, whose only form of pleasure is to stand idle and chase its own tail while sunsets and yachts sail on by. I'd be its keeper, watching storm clouds from afar, listening to God clap its hairy hands amidst the bedazzling lightning snow. And when muck and fog creep the coastline, I would blare the horn, drown on the salty foam that trickles down the northernmost tip of the peninsula. Can you hear it? The resonant, piercing siren, the frothy bubbles gurgling in my lungs? Because, baby girl, I see your face when we walk by the supersized Victoria's Secret's billboard. I see how you shop at Baby Gap to make Daisy Duke look like a skeleton nun. I see Pornhub teaching you a cyanogenic recipe on how to show love. Because, baby boy, I see you flexing in the mirror, sniffing your armpits. I smell the beer on your breath when I pick you up from your friend's house. I smell the skunk weed on your hoodie. Because, darling wife, I see the lines of doubt that creep along your eyes when you smile. I see you pinch the flaps of skin sagging below your navel. I see you move with the same feminine grace of the Russian ballerina I met 20 years ago. I keep cranking the lamp to bathe the spotlight on each of you, times shaking my head, even though I felt the same prickly thorns on my feet walking your path. The island would belong only to us, and every now and then we'd catch a golden sunray peeking through, or a 10-pound sea bass flopping away. We'd laugh or get teary-eyed, and I'd go back to the lighthouse with a bottle of whiskey and an ounce of moonlight, prepared to watch silently over and over again. End on.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Naomi, we're going to start with you, please.
Oh, wow. Cedar Chapman always amazes me with his writing. Oh, this is wonderful. If I had to write a book on fatherhood, he encompasses so much of what it is like to be a parent, and in this case, a father. He goes through, so poetically, how he sees his girl, and then his boy, and then his wife, and that lap dance is just amazing, and on the island that would belong only to us. Beautiful, beautiful, right, and so well done. Wow, amazing.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
I thought this was a wonderful piece by Cedar. An excellent composition of thoughts. I thought there were great descriptions and imagery throughout. I wasn't really sure what to expect from this, but there's a lot of down-to-earth thoughts in here. I didn't know if it was going to be something that was like kind of you know, whimsical. I shouldn't say whimsical, but, you know, a little less real. And I thought he really hit a lot of great notes in this. The Lighthouse kind of took me out in the beginning because I was like, okay. But there was a prompt involved with this, I believe, from what I'm seeing. And it was called Keeper of the Light. And then it goes, you know, a whole poem that I guess he kind of looked at and looked over and kind of plucked pieces and, you know, or thoughts. And I think that it was a fabulous take there. I love this last stanza. The island would belong only to us. And every now and then we'd catch a golden sunray peeking through or a 10-pound sea bass flopping away. We'd laugh or get teary-eyed, and I'd go back to the lighthouse with a bottle of whiskey and an ounce of moonlight, prepared to watch silently over and over again. I thought that was fabulous. So excellent job, Cedar, and thank you so much for sharing with us. I always appreciate you giving us poetry on Fridays. I love it. And, I think everybody
else
does.
Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
I envy his poem. Cedar does a marvelous job when he writes. He gets inside his poems and brings us visions that we might not otherwise see. And his vision of Father as a lighthouse keeper, indeed, as a lighthouse, if you will, because the lighthouse keeper is the essential ingredient in the operation of the lighthouse. I think the two become one. And the symbol of a father is a lighthouse who shows the way to a safe harbor, points out the dangers, I think is very resonant. When he says, can you hear it, the resonant piercing siren of frothy bubbles gurgling in my lungs, one could almost see the father warning a child or scolding the child at the top of his lungs, perhaps. So there's that horn, that siren, that of danger or caution or warning, it sounded. That's a wonderful visual image of the way parents have to talk to their kids sometimes. And he lets it be known that he understands the peccadilloes and the dangers of life when he addresses his baby girl, when he addresses his baby boy, yet he offers so much deference to his darling wife, who still moves the same feminine grace of the Russian ballerina I met 20 years ago. I thought those lines were particularly moving. And he'd keep cranking the lamp. And at the end of the day, what do you do but retire with a little bit of moonshine, a little sip of this or that? And somehow you've made it through another day as a lighthouse keeper. That's that phallic granite symbol. Great, great news.
You're absolutely right, because it does, those three stands between the girl, the boy, and the wife were wonderful. But that one following also hits on the loneliness that is exuded because of it. I keep cranking the lamp to bathe the spotlight on each of you, at times shaking my head, even though I've felt the same prickly thorns on my feet walking your path. That idea, you think I'm such a fuddy-duddy, but you know what? I was your age once, too, and I know of these things and the reflection of that which comes down the line and the dangers that are inherent within that. So the idea of that stoic granite hard edifice that is trying to keep the family safe is often ignored and overlooked. But then he gets on a nice touch. The island would belong to us. But there's that notion of no man can be an island nor a family. There has to be interaction. Otherwise, people go mad. Yet still, at the end, I'd go back to the lighthouse with a bottle of whiskey and an ounce of moonlight, prepared to watch silently over and over again. Now the stoicness has manifested itself into the love felt and the protection that he wants to offer up, even though he knows they all have to make their own decisions. And sometimes those decisions are going to smack them upside the head and kick their asses. But there's nothing they can do about it. Well done, Cedar. Thank you.
All right,
Jean. We're back just for you.
Let's see now. That brings me to Naomi. So, Miss Naomi, I have this poem called What Did I Do by Darkened Auras. And whenever you're ready.
What did I do? I'm chained up in the backyard with no room to roam. While you are nice and comfy in your nice warm home, you hardly give me water, forget that I need bed. Make me lay upon the ground while you all have a bed. You tell everyone I'm evil, always saying that I'll bite, while all the time you know it simply is not right. I have never bitten, not for lack of care, but to me it feels like you don't want to share. I just don't understand the new puppy stays inside. While I'm out in the doghouse trying hard to hide, I have a chain on my neck and a painful embedded collar, but you'll come out and beat me if I bark or try to holler. So tonight, as I lay here under the starless midnight sky, I whimper to myself. You don't even know I cry. I wonder how this happened. I thought I was a dog for you. But can you answer me this question? Just tell me, what did I do? So my breath is getting shorter, laying here all alone. And with my final sigh into the air, I let out one last moan. I knew this day would come, for I was able to foresee. As I slowly fade away, I know I'm finally free. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And, Laurent, we can kick it off with you, please.
Well, this poem kind of tore me up a bit because it gives voice to what is in a dog's face. You cannot tell me the dog's not voice through manner, through facial expressions, all the emotions that people suffer when they're happy, when they're sad, when they're terrified, when they're angry. You see it in the dog's face. They have these emotions. Most animals have these emotions. And when you take a dog and you chain it up outside and they have no mind, you steal something from that dog. You steal its heart. You steal its hope. It's a crime. I think half the people who own animals should never be allowed to own animals. I don't think I'm alone in this. And I have no sympathy for someone who's cruel to an animal, especially a dog, man's best friend. And all of that is voiced in this poem to a point where it just absolutely, it makes me want to cry. It really does. I wonder how this happened. I thought I was a dog for you. Can you answer me this question? Just tell me, what did I do? And you could see that in the image in the animal's face. There's love in that. There's sadness. That's it. That's all I've got to say.
All right. Thank you, Laurent. And Gene, how about you?
What a painful piece. There's so much, so many good stanzas in here that really do speak well of what she's getting at here. I just don't understand. The new puppy stays inside while I'm out in the doghouse trying hard to hide. I have a chain around my neck and a painful embedded collar, but you'll come out and beat me if I bark or try to holler. So tonight as I lay here under the starless midnight sky, I whimper to myself, you don't even know I cry. I could keep on going. It was a hard-hitting piece. It really was. And it's very factual. Sad to say. There's a sad reality to it. You know, it's not unheard of. It's common. In a lot of places, it's a common occurrence. And I think that PA actually captured it well in this. So, excellent. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. And Naomi, you got three. How about you?
Oh, yeah, my My heart aches all through this read. You know, it's so sad. It's so heart-wrenching. I echo both what Laura and Jean already said about it. So wonderfully written. She, you know, really brings out all the feelings, you know, the personification of the, you know, the of the dog, you know, and how they must feel in such a situation. It's just so, so sad. And like Phil said, you know what, it happens way too often. And Dark and Doris really hit on, you know, something that's really shouldn't happen, but happens way too much. So beautiful.
It was a great read, Naomi. Great read.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, you're all right. The sad truth is right in this note here. I just don't understand the new puppy stays inside while I'm out in the doghouse trying hard to hide. There's a painful note of even though hits on the back end, as I slowly fade away, I know I'm finally free. That puppy is going to be out taking his placement one day because there's something in the idea of, oh, everybody loves a puppy. They're so cute. They're so adorable. Yet they do grow up. And in this case, that puppy is going to be maybe 2 years as a house pet before it actually takes its place outside on that chain with that miserable collar and wondering the same thing as a new puppy is brought into the house. Thank you, D.A. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right,
okay.
Jane, we're coming to you.
Okie dokie. I'm going to put up Laurent's piece next. Here we go. And whenever you're ready, Laurent.
This is called Washing You Again at Night. I'm helpless before your pen singing its loving song. My love's taste of a vivid memory that lingers on lips and tongue. Your heart a golden orb when days are short, nights are long. I'm cradled in your words, exactly where I belong. Reaching across long miles, your letters touch my very core. Your lyricism transports me to a twilight zone in Baltimore. Vision of a remembered past, watching you sleep one night. Hovers curled round your breast. Spirit delights the lovely sight. I watch their rise and fall, how like an angel in repose. An innocence in your face, I'm unable to express in prose. Words rub against each other. My heart's poetry escapes, a verbal burst and an epiphany. Black throat shot, mouth agape. My thoughts resonate wildly, supposing we had never met. Would there have been anyone as singular, impossible to forget? Such rumination is painful, a gauntlet I will not endure. Rather, choose an endless sleep. Love's kiss being the only cure. Heartache was a bittersweet sorrow. Then I swear before eternal light, someday arrives as the hour I sit watching you again. And so.
Great read, Lenore. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, you got to kick us off. What we got?
Oh, I love this. I really do. I really love this poem by Lenore. And I love the inside joke. I just can't help it. It made me smile and made me laugh. I think that it's just beautiful. There's a lot going on in here. Really. I'm helpless before your pen, singing its lovely song. My love's taste of vivid memory that lingers on lips and tongue. I love that introduction right there. That first stanza is just enough to really draw you in and say, oh, what else is happening here? You know. I watch the rise and fall, how like an angel in repose, an innocence in your face I'm unable to express in prose. just lovely writing and beautiful thoughts. But yeah, yeah. Baltimore made me smile. Excellent job, Laurent. Really excellent job. And thank you so much. It's a great piece.
Nice. Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And Naomi, how about you?
Oops. You, Naomi? Yeah, you know, the I really, really love this too. The words rub against each other. My heart's poetry escapes. A verbal burst and an epiphany. Slack-jawed shock, mouth agape. My thoughts resonate wildly. Supposing we had never met, would there have been anyone as singular, impossible to forget? There's something so romantic about this, and tragic and nostalgic, all mixed, all intertwined into one. Such a lovely, lovely writer, Laurent. Just wow, amazing.
Thank you, Naomi.
Nicely said, that, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, the picture kind of elicits me as thinking something 19th century, about Midway. And the fact you threw in Baltimore had me thinking of Poe. And this kind of walks the last few stanzas, words rub against each other, my heart's poetry escapes, a verbal burst and an epiphany, slack George shock, about the gate. My thoughts resonate wildly, supposing we had never met. Should there have been anyone as singular, impossible to forget? Such rumination is painful, a gauntlet I will not endure, rather to choose an endless sleep, thus kiss being the only cure. Parting was a bittersweet sorrow, yet I swear before eternal light, someday arrives as the hour I sit watching you again at night. There's such a nice, on a grand day when all is perfect, I could see that as a note from Poe to his love, although that twilight zone in Baltimore has definitely a different meaning as this piece does itself. So I'm not even on those notes.
Well, that's a great comment and close to the mark.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, Naomi, I'm going to put your piece up next. Woo-hoo. Okay. And this is I Dream of You by Naomi Sarah. So whenever you're ready, girlfriend.
Okay. I dream of you. I dream of you in the rainy season. Your name wriggles on my tongue, a fish in a cove. Dream of you in the heart of the forest, inextricable, lost. For you I will weave a nest braided of leaves and jay, waiting for you like the dew lamped in the belly of the spring. I hear the drum of your feet beating a newborn dance. The earth is round under my breast where my heart thumps and flows. I dream of you, the sailor of my belly, cross the unknown seas in the sea caves, waiting for the hour of the tides, for your cry, which makes all capsize and come.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Laurent, we're going to kick it with you. What'd you think?
I read a poem like this, and I get filled with a very respectful sense of envy for the poem itself. The way that the voice of this mother talks to her unborn child is really kind of breathtaking. Dream of you in the heart of the forest, inextricable, lost. For you I will weave a nest braided of leaves and jay. What a wonderful way to refer to the nest, the leaves and the jay. waiting for you like the dew lamp in the belly of the spring, and the description of, I dream of you, the sailor of my belly, across the unknown seas and the sea caves, waiting for the hour of the tides, your cry, which makes us all capsize. You know, you parents are prone to exclamations of joy and wonder and a deep spirituality that I'm not going to say it upsets their lives, but it definitely takes your emotions and tumbles them. And so the use of the word capsize is a very good word, because the emotional boat we all ride in becomes so laden with the emotion of the moment that, yeah, it would make you capsize emotionally. But that phrase, the sailor of my belly, oh, bravo, bravo.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. And Jean, what about you?
Wow. This piece is gorgeous, Naomi. It really is. It's just gorgeous. Beautifully written. And I think that the metaphors throughout it are just incredibly well done. And, you know, I always grab something, right? But I also like your use of couplets. I really thought that they were really a great idea for this. But for you, I will weave a nest braided of leaves and jay. I'd take it from there all the way to the end. All the way to the end. You know, at that point, I may as well grab what's above it, too. There's not many left. It was just wonderfully done and wonderfully expressed. Really, it was a great piece. And I really enjoyed it very much. Clever thinking. Smart thinking. Well pulled together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
It is, and the metaphors are wonderful. You intimate in parts going down, but you don't get to that full note of where it's going until I hear the drum of your feet beating a newborn dance, and then the earth is round under my breast where your heart thumps in full. All of a sudden, you get transported to a little bit more of where your thoughts are going, and then that I dream of you, the sailor of my belly, across the unknown seas and the sea caves. The thought of walking birthing going that way is quite a novel idea, which really expresses everything that goes on, especially with the thought to a hour of the tide, and then the back end where you, which makes all capsize, the idea of the joy in the moment as all things culminate in both the tears of pain and tears of joy. So, lovely right there, Naomi.
Thank you. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
You're welcome, and thank you for sharing with us. That was excellent.
All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, well, this next piece I'm going to put up is by Stelina, and it's called Proven Guilty. And I have an audio for that. So here we go.
You see, because I wear a kilt, I'm nae man. Why don't you come and check for an hour of a tan? Unwrap me, bonny lass, and see what I mean. I'm sure you'll be surprised at what you've seen. I may wear a kilt, but I promise I'm nae sissy. And I'll prove it if you let me, my fine young missy. Just run your fingers over my spurn and see what you can find. I'm sure you'll soon imagine what I've got on my mind. Just slide up my skirt so to see first prize. I'm no embarrassed at my impressive size. Though you may be overwhelmed, you'll ne'er be disappointed. The evidence will show you I'm very well appointed. I always wear my kilt in the traditional way. Ach, the ladies round here just love a windy day. Indecent exposure, some say. Well, at least it's nae wilty. But remember this, I'm innocent till proven guilty.
Great read, Selena. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Gene, we're going to start with you.
No, that's all right. I agree. This was a wonderful piece. I got a real kick out of it when I was loading the audio. I don't usually listen to the audio, so I usually save them for the show to hear them all at the same time. But this was great. When as soon as I saw what the topic was, I said, oh, I got to hear this one. And I think that Stelina really nailed this. You know, the rhyme was great. The meter was great. The humor in it was wonderful. You know, whereas it's here, I may wear a kilt, but I promise I'm Narcissi. And I'll prove it if you let me, my fine young lad, Missy. Just run your fingers over my sporran and see what you can find. I'm sure you'll soon imagine what I've got on my mind. I just think it's great. I really do. Excellent job, Stelina. And, I like that voice changer. We wouldn't have known it was you if you hadn't told us. So, excellent job and a lot of fun. And thanks for sharing with us.
Thanks, Gene. How about you, Naomi? What do you think?
Oh, my gracious. You know, the voice changer really got me. I want that app. you know, hey, right? Oh, my gracious, I want to use that. But this is so neat. It's so such a wonderful, and the accent, too. You know, I saw that she wrote it for, you know, the Scottish accent. She used a Scottish accent for her friend, for Katie. And, you know, I'm sure she appreciated it. But, you know, it's such a fun piece to hear. And I was, like, giggling all through it. And, you know, that last line, indecent exposure, some say, well, at least it's may wilty. But remember this, I'm innocent till proven guilty. That's so neat. And you know, it was awesome all the way through. Such a clever and fun piece by Selena here. So well done. Oh my gracious. Really, really well done. So bravo, bravo, Selena. Bravo 1,000 times.
Thank you, Naomi. Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, let me get off mute. It works better that way. Well, I was laughing. I was giggling. I'm an admirer of guilt. It's so much easier to operate from as opposed to spouse, which confine and chafe. I say, banish the cod piece. Bring on the kilt. I was watching a video of this English busking group the other day, and the lead guitar happens to wear a kilt. And it happened to be a reaction video, and the person watching it was scoffing at the idea of a lead guitarist wearing a dress. You know, sometimes people do amaze me with their ignorance. I like kilts, and I thought the way that this was expressed was really, really well done. It was humorous, it was fanciful, it was imaginative, and I don't know, just excellent piece.
Absolutely. This was very funny and quite apt because it's when she's been on the shows and when she's sitting on the note of kilts. And I said, we've always teased about her about the kilts and windy days and stuff, and she's already lived into that really well. But this also reminds me of Kate be the one in those Benny Hill flicks. She'd be standing on the ladder waiting for the wee lads to walk up so she can get a glance beneath the kilt. Because Benny always frowned as the kilts went up. No, not my cup of tea. So this fits the motif very well. Nicely done, Selena.
Absolutely. Too funny. Okay, Rex, I'm going to give you this next one to read.
All right.
There you go. Whenever you're ready.
In My Hand by Daniel DeCino. I used to believe in history as a teacher of Buddha, of wisdom. I still believe it. I just think most people don't pay attention unless there are special effects or slapstick comedy. As ignorance seems a generational trait to marry with hatred as their children run free generation to generation. And so I cried at a book banning rally as Fahrenheit 451 was ripped and shreds thrown into the wind among a hurricane of angry cheers. In the aftermath, in a row, lonely city, in an out lonely city park, as the sunshine coats the grass, as birds and squirrels meander in peace, I picked up shredded pages in my hands to comfort the randomly murdered letters. And in my hands, I see, separate but together, letters, H-O-P-E, as if the soul, the essence, the message of Ray Bradbury could never be silenced. This time, I cried of joy. Inspired, I ran home, and on my laptop, using recently updated document processing software, I tapped the keyboard with my eyes closed, randomly entering letters for hours. Every once in a while, I would perchance create a word, beautiful words, elation, love, despair, family, pray, but they meant nothing, words in the computer. So I shut it off, grabbed the book I can hold in my hand. I pondered the cover art and wondered where the inspiration came from, and then dove headfirst into the author's dreams and poem. I like that. Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Long-time admirer of Ray Bradbury and all of his literature. In addition to Fahrenheit 451, got a book called The Martian Chronicles, which really should be read by everyone. The separate but together letters, quote, is a stanza that illuminates the power of a book and the cold anonymity of the computer, which doesn't see any meaning in the words. When he picks up that book and he grabs the book and holds it in his hand, ponders the cover art and wonders where the inspiration came from, it's something that you can do physically, that, you know, the sense of touch itself on a book beautifully bound, to me is the viewer that's almost impossible to deny. And then dove headfirst into the author's dreams. What a beautiful way of stating what he's about to do, because they are his dreams, his fanciful imaginings, and you're about to share them. Fahrenheit 451 is a great book to illustrate the generational stupidity that he refers to that seems to be on the increase in this country. Where you have people who hate for no reason I can figure out and transmit that to their children who run free generation to generation. Wow. Great piece, Daniel. Great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Naomi, how about you? You mutating? Dean, how about you?
Yeah, I think that this was a wonderful piece by Dan. I really do. I kind of picked up down here in the wording saying that inspired, I ran home on my laptop using recently updated document processing software. I tapped a keyboard with eyes closed, randomly entering letters for hours. Sorry. Every once in a while, I would perchance create a word, beautiful words, elation, love, despair, family, pray, but it meant nothing, words in the computer. So I shut it off, grabbed a book I can hold in my hand. I ponder the cover art and wonder where the inspiration came. It gives you a deeper appreciation for a real book, you know, because, well, I can't stand to read on the computer, honestly. Poems are okay because they're short. To sit and read a book on the computer, I could never tolerate it, even no matter what, okay? But something about having that book in your hand and, you know, looking at it and thinking about it and, you know, I don't know. It's just a whole different vibe I get from it. And that is what I find enjoyable when it comes to reading. So I think that he really aced this piece. Nicely done, Dan. You know, thanks for sharing it with us tonight.
Absolutely. Yeah, the difference between the two is stark. Because blue screen has a hard note to the eye. It drains. Reading a book is about a warm day outside or a cold, blustery day where it's raining like hell. And, hey, you know what? Pick up a book. You get immersed. You get to, instead of scrolling, you actually get to turn pages. It's about the feel. It's about the smell. It's about what comes off the page as you read, rather than a blank white wall with black letters on it. That idea would be the thought of tapping in random letters to see if something comes out of it. Hits me up with that idea of they're starting to use AI to write scripts for TV shows and movies and poetry even, and books. And I find that cold and lifeless. There's no thought process. There's no feeling within it. It's an empty void which leaves us as a caricature of ourselves if we go that route, because the mind is a terrible thing to waste, and to have it wasted because no one wants to actually use it for that which can be offered from the heart, from the soul, from the mind, is stark, and will offer us up as being illiterate one day. All right, Gene, right back to you.
Okay, we lost Naomi. So to put this next piece up, we have two pieces left, so I'm going to try and get them both in if we can. This next piece I'm going to put up is by Allison Hodges, and it's called Witch of the East. And, okay, let me see what I can do here. Okay, her life had always been misunderstood. She had never been able to be all good. Her sister, Glenda, got all the good press, while she did all she could to impress. Up to her neck with Glenda, the good witch, she turned her mind to being the best bitch. She learned nasty spells to get attention. Others considered her quite an affliction. She wanted only love like the others, grew bitter as backs turned, even her mother's. She sought the ruby shoes, hoping for respect, went to Fire Lake, these gems to collect. But nothing she ever did turned out right. She kept on trying with all of her might. But only in death came some sort of renown. But her fire stockings under the house, cobblestone. Wicked Witch of the East, as she was then named, her red ruby slippers slipped off in the rain. A simple young girl with girlish desires went down in flames like a dog in the fires. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, what do you think about this one?
In my hand, the title I can admire. I used to believe history as a teacher of Buddha of wisdom. I still believe that way. I'm not even on the right form.
No, you're not.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That, Buddha and wisdom.
I got distracted. I got distracted by something I can't talk about. Witch of the East. Can you give me a moment, please? Thank you.
Sure. All right, Jane, you got to read it. What do you think?
There was a neat piece. You know, up to her neck with Glenda, the good witch, she turned her mind into being the best bitch. She learned nasty spells to get attention. Others considered her quite an affliction. She wanted only love like the others. Grew bitter as backs turned, even her mother's. She sought the ruby shoes, hoping for respect. When the fire lake, these gems to collect. I don't know. It was a great take on the Witch of the West, or the Witch of the East, sorry. It was clever. It was well written. And it had some humor to it. And I liked it. So nice work, Allison, and thank you so much for sharing. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed the sardonic and pithy wit that was displayed in this. As you just read the note of the best bitch, that was a good take there. The thought with the ruby slippers and the fact that even mom doesn't like her that much. So it does offer up the note of two, and how one gets lit up like an evening sky, while the other one is kind of shooed under the bed, so to speak. And the irony is, the story doesn't change. All it offers up is the backstory to why she was who she was, which I thought was a clever twist in it. So, thank you, Allison. All right, Laurent, we're coming back your way.
Well, yeah, this is a clever piece for Glenda, right? I like she turned her mind to being the best bitch. She learned nasty spells to get attention. Others considered her quite an affliction. She takes the story and gives us a continuation of something that we're all pretty much familiar with, but she turns it on its head, really, because she creates out of a character someone that is completely misunderstood, like many of us. And nothing she ever did turned out right. She kept on trying with all her might, but only in death came some sort of renown. By her stockings under the house cobblestone, she weaves the original story into this continuation in a way that, I don't know, now it's part of the lexicon of the original story, which I like a great deal.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Gene. We're down to one.
We're down to one. And that will be. I hope nothing else sneaks up on me. And I think this is it. This one is by Titus Llewellyn. And it is called The Holy Grail, The Perfect Woman by Titus Llewellyn. And I have an audio for this. So here we go.
The Holy Grail, The Perfect Woman. I will admit, having spent a lifetime, having found the perfect abstract theory, a shadow puppet before, when enzymes did change for the good account, my query dark scatters, my friends, the protein of man, the trans-dimensional loop, denizen, it would account being unspoiled. When she had been given everything in life, then one is to spread through daylight's purity. Where this is found, then forever the child. Impurities are measured in the way durity, those imperfections a girl as we styled. The same can be said of relationships. The pearl inside has found its perfect form. If managed to immobilize the worship, he bedules her eyes to the cairngorm. To become infatuated by the darker threads, worn lightly in those nightclubs in their threes, the test of time is rancid. But instead, to bring the human species to its knees, one procures longing and belonging to. It takes time to erase the doom and gloom. To have him now resist her, both must do. The purity of love transposes to illume.
Great read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Jean, let's start with you.
Well, you're going to start with me. We're going to end with you. Laurent dropped, and Naomi as well. So it's just us two kids. I thought this was a beautiful piece by Titus. and there's so much in it. And, you know, he always writes so well. He writes with such a style. What's the word I want to say? Old world style is the way it always sounds to me. I don't know if it's his voice or his wording, but they go hand in hand, and it always has a classic poem feel. To become infatuated by the darker thread worn lightly in those nightclubs near threes. Wow, what am I doing here? I am right. Okay, I'm not crazy. worn lightly in those nightclubs near threes. The test of time is rancid, but instead, to bring the human species to its knees, one procures longing and belonging. It takes time to erase the doom and gloom, to have him now resist her. Both must do. The purity as love transposes to loom. I should know better than make these things really big when I start. You know, there was a great ending stanza there. I think that it's changes, that the vibe of this piece changes as we go through. And I find it kind of amazing. You know, I kind of expected it to stay in the thoughts of the first and second stanza. But there was definitely a change over there, and I thought that it was well done. I mean, Titus always writes well, and it's a great piece to share. And thanks, Titus. Sorry, it's last but not least, but better late than never is my other theory on that. It was a wonderful piece, and, you know, I really enjoyed it. So thanks for sharing.
Excellent. Thank you, Jean. It kind of hits me with the idea of even though men and women bear the same heritage, they are equally different in their perspectives as it comes to how men view women and the thoughts of love progression and marriage and so forth down the line. Women view men very differently, the very same way. It is that note of difference which keeps things both interesting and difficult. Because the ease in trying to find something that walks your very very same path, it isn't an easy one. And the fact that the differentiation, if you don't know it, don't understand it, causes you great problems when trying to find someone to date, someone to love, someone to spend time with. It's on that idea of just how different men and women are. If they knew a bit more about each other as far as psychological aspects go, there might be an easier understanding of how that scene works and how they might actually find each other. And I think that's what Titus is trying to get across, because it hits on the back end of this, because that note of that middle stanza where was that? That sort of I missed it. Oh, no, the last one. Become infatuated by the darkest thread worn lightly in those nightclubs in their threes. The test of time is rancid, but instead to bring a human species to its knees. One procures longing and belonging to take it to it takes time to erase the doom and gloom. To have him now resist her, both must do. The purity of love transposes to illume. You've got to, instead of taking it sometimes the easiest natural course of diving whole hog into, the easier course, the most profitable course, is to take it slowly so that things progress as they should naturally, instead of speeding up a process which usually ends up with dread. So nicely done there, Titus. Complex and deeply lit. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we cleared the board, Rex. That was pretty surprising. Nice job.
Yes.
I don't know. It just seems like carryovers are the thing. But it was a great night of poetry. Every poem was better than the one before. Themes, they were just really good. So lots of good things to share. And I want to thank you for co-hosting with me. And I want to thank Laurent and Naomi for calling in and hanging out with us. And, yeah, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. And thank you to everyone who shared poetry. It was made for an enjoyable night of poetry. And I hope you all stay out of trouble. Absolutely. So, I don't know. But great show, Rex. Great show.
Yes, it was. Had a wonderful time. And quite a diverse sort of pieces we had to play tonight.
Absolutely. Yeah, we really did. You know, we had humor. We had something. We had serious stuff. We had beautiful stuff. Yeah, it was really good. I liked it. I liked it a lot. So, anyhow, I'm going to let you go. And it's that time when we are off the air. And, if you need me, you know where to find me. Take care.
All righty.
Okay, good night, Rex. Thank you.
Night.
Night.